Welcome to Book Bumble, the podcast for people who love to read. In each episode, we'll introduce a stack of books that are tied together with a common connection to help take a deeper dive into each story.
We provide a space to talk books that is friendly and deep with a little hint of geek.
I'm Laura Pleasance.
And I'm Leslie Hopping.
And we are two friends who love spending time with our families, visiting libraries, and reading great books.
We are so happy you joined us. Let's get started.
Leslie.
Hi, Laura.
Welcome, everyone. This is episode 21 of season 2. And today, our stack of books is tied together with a connection of being books that are a bit lesser known or haven't got a ton of attention on social media.
Yes, and we want to bring them into the light.
We do. So what book do you want to start us out with?
Well, I would like to share The Magician's Daughter by H.G. Perry. This book came out in 2023, and H.G. Perry has other books out also, including another that I have on my to-read shelf called The Unlikely Escape of Uriah Heep. I would say that this author reminded me a bit of your Thornhedge or Starling House.
Okay.
Some magical realism that was just what I needed. Here's the starting point for The Magician's Daughter. We have two major settings, both in the early 1900s. We have London, or at least the seedier parts, and we have an island off the coast of Ireland called High Basil, Brazel. This island is made of magic, and it protects itself by only being able to be seen for one day every 7 years.
Oh, so the island is almost a character?
It is.
Okay.
It is, definitely. It's on this island that our main character, Biddy, or Bridget, grows up. She grows up with her caretaker, practically her father, Rowan, a mage, who has the ability to turn into a raven, and his familiar, a rabbit named Hutchincroft. These are the best characters. Rowan flies off of the island most nights to collect magic and share it with those less fortunate. Biddy spends her days adventuring on the island or reading books in their broken-down library. She looks to these classic books and their heroes as kind of a playbook for life because she really has never interacted with any other human beings or been anywhere else but on this island. Finally, as she is about to turn 17, she begs Rowan to finally be able to go to the mainland and spend the day off the island. She can tell that things are not going well, though, off of the island because Rowan comes home with bumps and bruises that he can't or really won't explain. Eventually, Biddy's worst nightmare comes true. Rowan doesn't come home from his latest trip, and she and Hutchincroft must find a way to save him and save magic.
Mm.
Come to find out, magic is disappearing from the world. And the council, of which Rowan used to belong, demands to be in control of any magic that's left, leaving kind of the rest of the communities around them with no hope, no miracles. And Biddy finds out that the past that she was told is not the real truth after all.
Hmm.
She has a part to play, and with only her books and their heroines to guide her, and of course her trusty friend, Hutchincroft, she just figures out who to trust and what she needs to do to save the greater good. Has anyone told her the truth about where she came from? And is it too late to try to find out?
Mm.
She was told by Rowan that he found her washed up on a boat on the island.
Okay.
And she was a baby. But that's not all necessarily true.
Okay. This is giving me have you ever read The Golden Compass?
Yeah.
It's giving me some vibes like that.
Yeah, this island reminds me of that now that you're saying that. The island has these great little characters on it. It's full of these rabbits and they are, everything's just a little bit mystical.
Okay. Does everybody have a familiar?
So the mages, often they have familiars,
okay.
Yes.
Because I think that's what was giving me the Golden
Compass vibes.
And I really
love that, yes. I love the familiar idea.
Okay.
And Hutchincroft can turn into a human.
Mm.
but it takes a lot of magic, and since magic is running out, he does that as little as possible.
Okay.
Things I loved about this book. Number one, and why I put it in this stack of books, is the way I found it. I was early somehow, because I'm never early, to a meeting at the library and was just browsing the stacks, literally just running my hand along the, the bindings. And I saw this very interesting cover and title. I grabbed it and The Unlikely Escape of Uriah Heep and checked them out right away.
Mm.
It's so fun to find what feels like a random gem on the stacks. It's one of the reasons libraries are so important. Would never have looked for this author specifically. Sorry, H.G. Perry, because you're wonderful. Or the book, because I just didn't know it existed. So thank you to the librarians that provide more than just the hottest books of the time. Yeah. I appreciate that. Another thing I loved, this book was so fun to read. You have to put reason aside and just enjoy the little sprinklings of magic that are threaded through this book. It's a literal escape from reality with a world that you understand because it's real, right away giving you something to connect with. And H.G. Perry writes amazingly whimsical characters that have depth and breadth. I like that even the best characters had their secrets and had made decisions that were definitely in the gray area. This made them relatable, even if they were magical. It was kind of like getting to know the Harry Potter characters. There was always something to be said about Snape, and always a little darkness to Dumbledore. Mm-hmm. And that's what I felt about the characters as I read this book.
Okay.
And lastly, starting a book with no expectation of what to expect. Like, I heard so much, this is supposed to be one of the best books of 2023.
Right.
It was a real joy. I just had no expectation for it. This author's writing was, like I said, whimsical and rich. The story was definitely good versus evil, but the lines weren't always defined, which made it more fun to read and explore. I really enjoyed the author's style, and I can't wait to read the next one.
Hmm.
There is no plan for a second book within a series, but I'm excited to read any book that she has, and that was The Magician's Daughter by H.G. Perry.
Wow. So now, I don't know if you know this, but are these her only two books, or does she have more? You're not sure?
I'm not sure. She is pretty young. And she lives in New Zealand. She has a PhD in English literature. She's written some short fiction, which I did see. I didn't even recognize. But I think these are her two.
Okay.
Oh, no. She had, I'm looking it up right now, Declaration of the Rights of Magicians.
Okay. And is the Unlikely Escape of Uriah Heep, did I say that one correct?
Yes.
Is that fantasy?
Yes.
Okay.
So it's about someone coming out, a character coming out of a book.
Oh,
yeah.
I feel like all just I've so seen neat. That one. I don't know if I've seen that one on a shelf or on a review or something, but that sounds great.
It's really neat because it shows the writing in a page. And a character almost like a hole in the page and a ladder coming out.
Okay,
like,
that sounds great.
Out. They all are just really beautiful covers.
Okay, so awesome.
I hope you enjoy that.
I will. And that's my kind of fantasy where the world is very relatable.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
Okay, I've got another one I want to share. So this one is called The Prospectors by Ariel Janikian. Was published in October of 2023. And okay. She also wrote The Office of Mercy, which is a post-apocalyptic novel. So this one is quite different, being historical fiction. And here's the starting point. The Bush family and the Barry family are forever connected when brothers marry sisters and one couple strikes it rich in the Klondike gold rush of the late 1890s. Can you imagine that if, like, you and your sister were married to brothers and your sister and brother became millionaires? So Alice
and
Bush...
And by chance. Sorry, that always... The prospectors, it's always, like, by chance.
Right. So Alice Bush travels to the Klondike as a companion to her sister Ethel, whose husband, Clarence Barry, has had the ultimate good luck of striking a vein of gold. There, she must confront hardship and danger and herself. And the story follows her and the rest of the two families as they seek to grow their fortune. So the sisters are very close.
Okay.
The second timeline is 2015, and it follows Anna, a descendant of Alice. Anna's trying to help her grandfather bequeath a large sum of money to a descendant of the First Nations people whose lives and land were taken.
Yeah.
And changed forever.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that just interesting?
Yeah.
So I have to talk about Alice first.
Okay.
She is so many things, and she's one of the most complex characters I've read in a while. She's opportunistic, always, which sometimes when we hear that word, that's not really a positive character
right.
trait.
Right.
She's always watching people and trying to discover their secrets. And when she does, she tries to figure out how to leverage them.
Okay.
She's unsatisfied. And there's a great line from the book. And this is it.
Okay.
Quote, "She was alone, but not really, because here was her old friend, dissatisfaction, thumping its muscled wings in her chest."
That's great.
Unquote. And that kind of sums her up.
Mm-hmm.
She was also manipulative and deceitful, and she was always managing everything, but doing all these things in order to preserve her family and to make sure she'd never fall into the great poverty that her birth family lived.
Wow.
So she was always planning and kind of scheming because she didn't want to go back to that life. Somehow, though, the author writes her in a way that you understand her. And while you don't love her, at least I didn't, you're wanting to read more about her. She's incredibly morally conflicted and complex.
Yeah.
And that's, I love reading about those types of characters, very multi-layered. She's going to make you think a great deal about the price that people pay and the price that people make others pay in the name of self-preservation and trying to make life, you know, for lack of a better word, stable.
Okay.
Because that's what she was constantly trying to do.
She was looking for stability for the future.
Right. And I thought the presentation of her sister, Ethel, so remember Ethel's married to the man who struck it big, was the perfect counterbalance to this. Ethel was married to Clarence, and you might think that Ethel would have been the one holding on so tightly to everything because they had everything, but she didn't. She had a more of a softer heart. The family dynamics were super intriguing and interesting. Clarence and Ethel were worth about $1 million from their gold, which in today's standards would be about $100 million.
Oh, my.
So, and I did have to keep reminding myself of that because I would think like, oh, they're worth $1 million.
Yeah.
You know, whoop-de-doo.
Right.
But
yes.
When you think about today's standards, so imagine.
And from nothing, it sounds like.
Yeah, and I shouldn't say that, like, whoop-de-doo, you're worth $1 million. But.
You and I mean, obviously.
Yeah,
I mean.
But so just kind of imagine. No, we're not. Think about the siblings and the parents always wanting, and not just family. Mm-hmm. So somebody was always wanting something from them.
Mm-hmm.
So they had other siblings. Their mom and dad were wanting things, and then other people. And at one point in the story, Alice has a little parlor in her home with a safe of her brother-in-law's money that she loans or gives to people who come asking.
Oh, gosh.
And they would have, like, lines of people.
Oh, geez.
And, of course, she's convinced Clarence that she should take that from his plate.
Hmm.
And she's doing that in order to control what goes out. She's not stealing. She just, remember, she's coming
that
from
control.
That place of wanting everything to remain as is, to right. always have enough and not go and back to that life of poverty.
You said she liked to manage things, and that mm-hmm. definitely is this.
Yeah, and she had the little dissatisfaction, always yeah. thumping, so she wanted to be in control. Clarence, her brother-in-law, is really generous to people, and he especially likes to help those who helped him when he was down and out, because when he first went to the region, he had nothing and was living just a very hard life. And, you know, kind of struck it rich with some hard work, but also a lot of luck.
Yeah.
So he would want to help out these people from the past that had, like, given him a place to stay or a job.
Oh, he and Alice sound lovely. Or he and Ethel.
Yeah, they were really nice. So this book, the setting and the history are fantastic. I can't remember reading a book about the Gold Rush. And that's one of the things that drew me to the book was just it has a really neat cover. And I was like, whoa, I don't think I remember ever reading a story about this. And the sense of place is so strong. It has great descriptions of the brutal living conditions. They were cold, hungry, and what it was like to search for gold. All super interesting. There are two indigenous people who play crucial roles in this book, Jane and Jim, and their siblings. Jim makes a great deal possible for Clarence, and we see the white privilege really come to the forefront in their relationship. Jane also does a lot for both couples, and she plays a pivotal role after the couples return to Los Angeles, where they came from. She's a really interesting character, and I would read a book just about her. Oh.
That's interesting.
And did I mention there's a murder?
Oh, no. So, I guess Alice. No, I'm just kidding. I have no idea.
So this book, it deserves a read. And I wonder if it hasn't gleaned as much attention on social media because the main character isn't what you expect, maybe. The story is about family dynamics, motivations, stolen land and lives, claims. So
not just gold,
I like that word. And gold. And you can go down the rabbit hole quite a bit. There are a lot of really interesting pictures online. Since these families were real people, the Bushes and the Berries, you can read. You can read about them.
Oh, interesting.
You can read articles. There's a interview with the author that you can listen to. It is one that you can do a lot of research in, and I did for a while. Right after I read it, I really was looking up pictures and read some articles because, you know, this is historical fiction.
Right. Yeah.
So, but it was just, it's really interesting to me.
Sounds really good.
That time period, and just to think about, you know, giving up everything and going, and, you know, we're not talking about like flying on a plane to Alaska. We're talking about going over treacherous mountains.
Dangerous. And, it was so dangerous.
Yeah. And you're going to be so interested as to why Alice is asked to be Ethel's companion.
Oh.
It's not just.
Not just sisterly help.
Yeah. That's going to interest you. And Ethel is going to interest you because she was quite kind of, I guess the word would be famous amongst people who were traveling to the Klondike region for her. You know, she was like one of the only women and the way that she carried herself and the way that she got there, she became kind of well known for that. And then just in the book, there are some things that happen to Ethel.
Okay.
And you're just, I don't want to spoil it.
It's really
just, it's great. It's a great, great book to get into.
Well, I will be honest. I was listening to you explain Alice, and I was like, she just sounds like a great character. She didn't at all to me. A great character to read about, but then you start talking about her her purposes, her reasons, mm-hmm. what was inside. And I think that's what makes that depth of character so interesting. You don't have to love a character.
No.
Or for who they are.
Right.
But if the author does a good job of writing them, you're intrigued by them.
Yeah.
And you want to know what happens.
And she just does so many things that when you know what her motivations mm-hmm. are, you can mm-hmm. understand a little bit more. But it's just, it's a great character development story. Yeah. And there is also action in it.
That's interesting.
So I think that you should read it.
Is it a big one?
No.
Okay.
It's not.
Just wondering.
It's really good.
All right. I'm excited.
Okay. So that's The Prospectors by Ariel Janikian.
All right. Well, I want to share another book that went under the radar for me, but was a real winner. This is by an author that we both love, but going into our backlist, I found this one. Honestly, I needed a new book to listen to.
Okay.
And I just started looking up some solid authors that I like.
Okay.
And found this, and I'd never heard of it before.
Okay.
To be honest, I haven't read anything about this event before, so it was a surprise in many ways. The book that I want to share is A Bridge Across the Ocean by Susan Meisner, and it came out in 2017. We've talked about The Nature of Fragile Things Only the Beautiful by the same author. So here's a starting point for A Bridge Across the Ocean. World War II is finally over, which right away is just a different part of mm-hmm. that genre.
Right.
Like it's
post.
Not mm-hmm, right, just immediate post. But there's no peace in the remaking of cities and humankind anytime in the near future for these people. We first meet Annalise Lang. She's a beautiful German ballerina who was forced into a marriage with a very abusive Nazi officer. It was really, it was painful scene of him insisting on this marriage at dinner with her parents and that she just was looking at them to please say no.
Oh.
But he was a Nazi officer and they knew they really couldn't.
Oh, wow.
And it was a short scene, but it was very powerful. And you see a lot of these in this book. All she wants is to reconnect with her best friend, Katrina, who has escaped Germany, and get away from her husband before she is added to his kill count. Next, we meet Simone Devereaux, a daughter of a French resistance spy. The last time she sees her heroic father is when he and her brother are executed outside of her door as she watches from the window. As she runs for safety and is hidden by other resistance fighters, she meets an American war photographer and helps save his life. Eventually, the two women's paths meet on the RMS Queen Mary as they join with other war brides crossing the Atlantic to be reunited with their American husbands. As they cross, they're treated so kindly, and they start to share their deepest secrets in their staterooms. But unfortunately, one of them never makes it off the Queen Mary at the New York Harbor.
Okay, I'm already intrigued by this.
In the present day, recently married Brett Caslake is asked to do an old acquaintance a favor. Brett can see spirits, and this old friend needs her help for his little girl because she recently lost her mother and thinks she feels her when she and her father visit the Queen Mary, now docked in California as a museum and a hotel. She reluctantly agrees, as she likes to keep her gift locked up tight. And when she visits the Queen Mary, she comes in contact with a spirit that needs Brett to clear up an almost century-long mystery. She can't see the person, she just feels them.
Okay.
She's never used her gift to help, but for some reason she feels this job, this task, is too important to let go of. Brett goes on a journey to find out what really happened with Annalise and Simone and clear up the misconceptions of the time. And in trying to clear this up, Brett starts to realize what it was that she really needs in her life.
Mm.
Lastly, we have the voice of a ghost that is sprinkled in. We don't know who she is or what she's doing, but she seems to push the pace of the story along with a sense of intrigue, mystery. This story was masterfully created by Susan Meisner after vast research about the war brides and their journey to be reunited with their American husbands in Long Beach. She wrote much about this in her book based on her interviews with June Allen. She and her baby son were on the first of 13 voyages that the Queen Mary made to take over 20,000 brides to be with their husbands.
Wow.
Which I just, that's what I've never read about, these war brides that were being brought over.
Mm-mm.
And on the trip, they would have like some classes in English etiquette, just have really nice dinners. They were treated really nicely, and then they were reunited with their husbands.
Interesting.
I know. I included this in the stack because I think most of us might have read her most recent books, but Susan Meisner has a wonderful backlist, and this is a great place to start. Sometimes when a prolific author has such a large backlist, it, at least for me, can be overwhelming, but this is a must read if you enjoy historical fiction.
I
really went down the rabbit hole with this. I looked up the war bride voyages and how they were put together and the way they went about reconnecting these married couples. I also wanted to know everything I could about the RMS Queen Mary and all the jobs it had. I won't say much more about her, but she really takes such a major role in each of the women's stories. And lastly, I loved these characters. I felt so deeply for them. These women and men had to survive, but they wanted to thrive. And the work that had to go into that was immense in the times in which they lived. They had to depend on themselves just as much as they had to trust and depend on others in times where it was hard to know who to trust. You even see this theme in the present with Brett as she's teased and ridiculed for her gift when she's younger. Who can she trust? Or can she even trust herself with this? So check this one out. You'll be able to grab it off the shelf, hopefully. I listened to it on Libby and really, really enjoyed the narration. They did a really nice job with the voices. And that was The Bridge Across the Ocean by Susan Meisner.
I'm definitely going to get that one.
You will.
Because I love her anyways, yeah. And I like your comment about going into the backlist.
Sometimes it's just like, whoa, there are so many. Which ones are the best? Like, I want to know. I don't have time to read every one of them right now. But this one was
Sounds amazing.
A surprise.
Sounds good.
I
want
you
to,
if
we do a homework episode, I want you to give me that one. But I'll probably read it before that. Okay.
You're just an overachiever. You're a homework early.
Okay. So now we're going to get into a book that is heavy.
Okay.
So it's called Sparrow. It's written by James Hines. It was published in 2023. This was a difficult book to read, but also one I'm not going to soon forget. So here's the starting point. Sparrow is a young enslaved boy growing up in a brothel on the Spanish coast in the last days of the Roman Empire. This is the only life he's ever known. Focaria, the cook in this brothel, teaches him about life and work in the kitchen, as well as protecting and standing up for himself. So kind of a mother figure, but she's a pretty tough cookie because she has to be.
Right.
Euterpe, one of the wolves, which is the name for the enslaved women forced to be prostitutes that live and work here, tells him stories, and she is a kind of more of a loving mother figure to him. So Focaria kind of teaches him, and Euterpe loves him.
Okay.
But life is really hard, and eventually the cruel owner of the tavern sees that Sparrow is beautiful and forces him into child prostitution. So this story explores how he navigates his life and his relationships with the wolves, the women, and with the larger village. So this book is explicit and it's graphic, and you should know that before reading it. So if that triggers you, you're not going to want to read it right now. Sparrow, the boy, he's just a very sympathetic main character, and I wanted something so very different for him. And I also wanted something so very different for the wolves, the women. It's a look into history, which I found fascinating. So I just, you know, we read a lot of these Greek retellings, right. Or I just read a book about Pompeii and historical fiction.
Yeah.
But, you know, this was a real society, Roman society, and this was a huge part of their society. So it's one of the reasons I picked the book up. I read an article recently about archaeologists discovering a bakery in the Pompeii Archaeological Park in Italy that shows where people were enslaved and forced to bake. It was part of a larger home which was destroyed when Mount Vesuvius erupted. Which, by the way, I now want to go to see this archaeological park. So in this, I don't know, this site that they found, people were forced to grind grain to use in bread. There was also evidence of the animals that were used to help with the process. And there were only a few windows which had iron bars on them. And the only doorway led into the main house, which was lavish. So that's one of the reasons they were able to determine that it was used for enslaved people. There's also a part in the book Sparrow about a bakery and how the grain was ground that connects with this real life finding. So I found that really fascinating, including the animals that they used. Slavery was a huge part of ancient Rome, and I thought the author uses Sparrow, the boy, and his found family to tell part of this story. It's very disturbing to think of people being enslaved, so the book isn't going to be for everyone, and I had to put it down sometimes, but I am glad I read it. I think it pairs well, like I said, with some of these Greek reimaginings, because it just gives a real life look at what many people of the time were living. Yeah. And I say real life, I guess I mean historical fiction look, but based on tons of research. And I was thinking it felt important to read something that gave a different view. And in the article I read about the bakery, it said that the majority of the population of Pompeii was enslaved people.
Oh.
And even though this book doesn't take place in Pompeii, it is a Roman society. And I like that this focused on a segment of these people that we normally wouldn't want to discuss. The book had themes of friendship, found family, love, and loyalty in it. So while it is a heavy read, the characters were doing the best they could to live as well as possible. That human connection was so important, as it is in so many of the books that we read. It also had an amazing setting and sense of place. It was really transporting in that way. You know, Sparrow has to go out into the larger village and do some jobs to help this tavern keep running. And you see the way that the people are living. And it's just really good. I mean, it is very heavy and graphic, but the friendship and it's just the way that he loves these women and they love him back. It's a great book. So that is Sparrow by James Hines.
And I don't like to only read light, whimsical books all the time. We have to push ourselves sometimes to read out of that. And I feel like that adds depth and breadth to everything else we read,
too. I do, too. But just know that if you're going to read this, it's
explicit. And pick the time that you think you can.
Yeah, it has a really cool cover too.
Well, thank you. So what's in your hand right now?
Okay, this is something totally different. Totally different. Also has a beautiful cover.
Yes.
This is Adelaide by Genevieve Wheeler. It was published in 2023. I posted about this one on our Instagram page, and I really liked it. It's a lovely story about giving and receiving love. It's about grief, mental health, and what showing up means, both for yourself and others. Mm-hmm. And I really liked that theme a lot.
Yeah.
Because you know, we think about you do need to show up for your friends, but you also need to show up for yourself sometimes.
Yes.
And this character isn't always really good at that.
Okay.
So the starting point is that Adelaide, 26, is an American living this great life in London. She's in love with the city. She has fabulous friends who have tons of fun together and who support each other no matter what. She's living this life in such a fun place to be young. Then she meets Rory and falls head over heels in love with him. But there's a pretty big problem. When they're together, he's wonderful and attentive, and it seems like he's all in. But then again, he doesn't answer texts or calls. Mm. He doesn't want to make plans in advance. And he doesn't seem to be bothered by gaps in their communication. And she's doing the lion's share of everything in this relationship, and she's totally smitten. So while she is kind of bothered by the fact that he doesn't seem to be all in all the time,
she's still
willing to do this.
Yes.
Then a tragedy happens to someone from Rory's past, and it rocks his world, and their relationship seems to be all about that now.
Okay.
So it's consuming him, and Adelaide is pouring everything into trying to help him, but she's being consumed as well.
Yeah.
I loved the way that this book explored a relationship that had issues from the start.
Yes.
And Adelaide could see them, but she was so in love, and she really wanted to make it work, so what was she to do? Mm-hmm. You know, it made me think about, I don't have any daughters, but if this were my daughter, I would be saying to her,
stop it.
Are you doing?
Yeah, stop
it. Can't you see? Yeah. I think a lot of people could relate to this, either thinking about a romantic relationship or a friendship.
Mm-hmm.
Your own, or maybe something you notice happening with a friend or family member. It also had these great themes of female friendship. Adelaide's girlfriends were a support system, and they showed up for one another and shored each other up when needed, even when the other didn't know they needed it. Mm. You know, these friends would show up for her and say, hey, we're going to do this, or hey, we're noticing this. And because Adelaide was being consumed by her relationship with Rory, there were hurt feelings sometimes and mistakes that were damaging to the friendship because she wasn't seeing sometimes what her friends needed. They were kind of doing all the giving.
Yeah.
So also there were some mental health themes that were addressed in this story that I thought were well done and realistic, kind of showing the importance of having people to support you and be in your corner when you can't be in your own corner or see what you need. So thinking about who's in your foxhole and are they going to protect you, fight for you, speak up and out for you.
Yeah.
I like that.
I like that too.
Theme. This book is also about figuring out when you need to put yourself first and what you need to put yourself first, and how difficult that really can be.
Yeah.
I think we've all been there in some way. There are some heartbreaking parts that explore that motif in this novel, and it really has a solid ending too. You'll get to see what happens to the characters in the future.
Oh, that's always
and
fun.
Yeah. That is always really satisfying. I'd really recommend getting this into your hands. Adelaide by Genevieve Wheeler.
I've seen it. When you said beautiful cover, I was like, oh, yes, it does.
Yeah.
I haven't read it yet.
Yeah, I think you'd really like it.
Well, thanks for joining us today. And please, please remember to subscribe, hit that little plus button, and review our podcast on whatever site you listen to it, and share us with a friend.
Yes. So glad you joined us today. If you'd like some other titles that go along with this theme, check out our show notes from today's episode.
Please share this episode with a friend and check us out on Instagram at TheBookBumble. We'd love it if you would subscribe to our podcast. Join us next time with a new bundle of wonderful reads.
Until next time.